Now, in a black and white film, a shield inscribed with the letters WB appears. Executive producer Jack L. Warner and Warner Brothers Pictures Incorporated present James Cagney as George M. Cohan in Yankee Doodle Dandy. Based on the story of George M. Cohan, this film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Samantha Manahan and Christina Faust. Read by Wendy Sacchettini. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. More titles with Joan Leslie, Walter Houston, Richard Worf, Irene Manning, George Tobias, Rosemary DeCamp, Gene Cagney, Francis Langford, George Barbier, S.Z. Zakal, Walter Catlett, Douglas Croft, Minor Watson, and Eddie Foy Jr. Executive producer Hal B. Wallace. Associate producer William Cagney. Screenplay by Robert Buckner and Edmund Joseph. Original story by Robert Buckner. Orchestral arrangements Ray Heindorf. Musical director Leo F. Forbstein. Copyright 1942, Warner Brothers Pictures Incorporated. Lyrics and music by George M. Cohan, directed by Michael Curtiz. Now a marquee above a theater, Sam Harris presents George M. Cohan in his triumphal return to the stage in I'd Rather Be Right. As theatergoers leave, two men wearing fedoras stroll out.
I call it a hit.
What'll your review say?
Bossy? I like it too, so I guess I'll pan it.
Oh, that's logical.
My publisher resents Cohan impersonating the President of the United States.
Says our young readers dream of being President.
I'd rather be right than be President.
Cohan may find out he isn't either one.
Now, a debonair couple enters the crowded dressing room of the silver-haired star.
See how George does it at his age.
I remember when I was a little boy.
Congratulations, George, my boy.
You did a great job. Thanks very much.
Congratulations, Mr. Cohan. You had him down to a T.
Well, that's all very well, but we're still treading on dangerous ground. You know, imitating the President of the United States. A lot of people aren't going to like it.
Oh, it's all good, clean fun. Didn't they enjoy the tryout in Boston?
Never could do anything wrong in Boston.
Greatest man in the United States, played by the greatest actor. Nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Best you in the greatest actor is my husband.
This could be treason.
Oh, don't worry, George. I know a dollar a year man will take care of you.
A lot of them would like to shoot actors.
You better save these telegrams. The government needs paper. We've got a list like who's who here. There's everybody but Hirohito.
We'll bring him in on a shutter.
Here's the one I sent you. Aren't you going to read all that cleverness?
And what makes you think I didn't? I didn't know there was that much love left in the entire Western Union code book.
George kisses his wife.
Thank you.
Uh-oh.
Don't bother me.
It's from the White House.
Oh, that bothers me.
Yeah.
Well, if you read it, would it, Sam? These are my reading glasses. What is this?
George M. Cohan, the Alvin Theater, New York. The President of the United States requests that you call upon him at your earliest convenience in regard to a personal matter. Kindly reply for definite appointment at White House. Stephen T. Early, Secretary to the President.
There you are, Sam. There you are. What did I tell you? Coming at a time like this, with everything he has on his mind, this is not just a casual invitation. This is important. I think we're in trouble.
Don't worry, dear. They don't telegraph you to come and be shot at sunrise.
He doesn't get up that early.
Yeah, besides, I got to run on the play contract. Fine time to be making lame jokes. I'm worried, Sam. I'm really worried.
George peels off his bushy eyebrows and nose makeup. Later, in Washington, D.C., a slanting rain pelts the domed Capitol building. George, wearing a fedora and an overcoat, strolls through the downpour to the White House gates, where two armed sentries stand guard. A third sentry emerges from a guardhouse.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
I've got an appointment.
And the name, please?
Cohan. George M. Cohan.
All right, sir. If you'll wait just one moment, I'll call.
The sentry returns to the guardhouse and picks up a phone receiver.
Sergeant Lewis at the Pennsylvania Avenue gate.
Later inside, a butler bows.
Good evening, Mr. Cohan.
Good evening.
We've been expecting you.
Thank you.
The black, tuxedo-clad butler takes George's overcoat.
Why, your coat's wet. Didn't you come in the car?
No, I walked up in the station. Washington's a great town to walk in. Always get a kick out of it, rain or shine.
Yes, indeed. Won't you come with me?
They climb a tall, portrait-lined staircase.
I was supposed to be off duty this evening, Mr. Cohan. But when I heard you was coming, I just thought I would like to see if you looked to see it.
Well, that depends. That's when you saw me last, doesn't it?
Well, it must have been 30-some years ago. I was valet for Mr. Teddy Roosevelt. He got me a seat up in the gallery. The play was George Washington Jr. And you was just singing and dancing all about the grand old flag. Mr. Teddy used to sing it in his bathtub.
It was a good old song in his day.
Yes, sir, it was, and it's just as good today as it ever was.
They walk down an elegant hall to a set of double doors.
Come in.
George enters the Oval Office where the gray-haired president smokes a cigarette.
Well, hello there. How's my double?
Your double isn't any too sure. You've got to give me time to work on that one.
Why, I was told you knew all the answers.
There was a time when I thought so. Right now, I wish I did.
Yes, so do I. Sit down, Mr. Cohan.
Thanks.
They shake.
You know, I'm a little bit nervous.
I'm sorry I missed the opening of your show.
Maybe just as well.
Don't worry about it. We understand each other perfectly.
I think so.
The Herald Tribune says that you make a better president, and I'd rather be right than I am.
Don't forget, that's a Republican newspaper.
I can remember you and your family very well, the four Cohans.
Do you really, Mr. President? Well, that's a long time ago.
Yes, it was while I was attending school near Boston.
I was a pretty cocky kid those days, a pretty cocky kid. Regular Yankee Doodle dandy, always carrying a flag in a parade or following one.
I hope you haven't outgrown the habit.
Not a chance.
That's one thing I've always admired about you Irish Americans. You carry your love of country like a flag, right out in the open. It's a great quality.
I inherited that. Got that from my father. He ran away to the Civil War when he was 13. Proudest kid in the whole state of Massachusetts.
So you've spent your life telling the other 47 states what a great country it is.
I never thought of it just that way before, but I guess that's about the size of it. And I lost... It was in Providence, Rhode Island on the 4th of July. There weren't so many stars then, in the flag or on the stage, but folks knew that more were coming. They were optimistic, happy, and expectant. The beginning of the Horatio Alger age.
Now, a crowd waves American flags as Union soldiers march in a parade. A sign outside the Colony Opera House lists the acts for the first week of July, 1878. Included are Mr. and Mrs. Jerry Cohan, the Irish darlings.
My father was playing in a variety theater, breaking in a single. Nobody was more expectant than he was, unless it was my mother. She was busy right then on a smaller production.
Jerry Cohan.
Jerry is me name by trade. I am a dancing master. There's no one can teach the same, nor teach it any faster. It's easy, very easy, if you'll watch every twist, every turn. Keep your eyes upon me and surprised you will be at the dancing you have yet to learn.
Jerry holds a cane in both hands and hoofs a sprightly tap dance. Wearing a knicker suit and a top hat adorned with a buckle and shamrocks, he twirls, then kicks his cane onto his shoulder.
Keep your eyes upon me and surprised you will be at the dancing you have yet to learn.
He rushes backstage.
Your message come from me yet?
Where'd you, Jerry?
You better take a bow, Jerry.
I can't take a bow. I gotta get out of here. Watch that border.
I gotta get out of here. I gotta find out what's happening.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Jerry. Take up number three.
You're on. Go ahead.
Lights up.
Bye, Sally.
Good luck, Jerry.
Hey, you can't run through the streets in that outfit. They'll put you in jail.
You have to catch me first.
Bring us the news.
Don't forget, Jerry, you're on again at 4:15.
Don't worry, I'll be back.
Candel, these things take hours sometimes.
My wife never held up a show in her life.
Wearing his costume, Jerry dashes outside into the flag-waving crowd. As the parade passes, he doffs his pilgrim hat and furrows his brow. Spectators pack the streets. Jerry puts his hat back on, squeezes his way up front, and runs over to a marching policeman.
Excuse me, can I get through here?
The Irish are all over the head of the parade, as usual.
I'm not in the parade. I want to get through.
Not a chance, brother.
Behind him, two soldiers ride horses, pulling a cart and cannon. Two more soldiers sit sternly on the cart's bench. Jerry hops on and whispers to one of them.
You don't say so, we'll get you there in a jiffy. Here, this'll give you courage. Charge!
The soldier hands Jerry a flag. People scatter out of the way as the carriage breaks away from the parade and speeds off. Later, Jerry enters a bedroom where a doctor listens to his stethoscope.
Nellie.
Jerry peers over the doctor's shoulder.
Nellie.
Lying in bed, a woman with sparkling eyes smiles weakly up at him. Jerry returns a wide grin, then glances at the doctor.
Is she all right?
She's doing fine.
What is it?
Well, all signs point to its being a boy.
Nellie reaches for Jerry, and he takes her hand. He moves to kiss her, then glimpses the baby beside her and furrows his brow.
Why, he just got here, and he's sleeping already.
All babies sleep 20 hours a day, Jerry.
I suppose that's why most of them never amount to anything. What do they call him?
Oh, I don't know.
What do you say?
Well, seeing that he arrived on the 4th of July, what about George Washington Cohan?
Well, it has a nice patriotic ring to it, all right. What do you think?
Oh, the George is fine, but the Washington may be too long for a billboard.
How about a nice short Irish name, Dennis or Michael?
George Michael Cohan. Yes, I like that name.
Oh, gosh, I forgot.
He waves his flag out the window at the soldiers below.
Hey! It's a boy!
A soldier lights a cannon.
Oh, Jerry!
George carries his flag back to the bed and smiles down at his squirming son.
Heavenly day, Nellie, he's crying with the brogue.
Jerry puts the flag in George's little hand.
I guess the first thing I ever had my fist on with the American flag, I hitched my wagon to 38 stars and 13 stripes. You know, I was 6 or 7 years old before I realized they weren't celebrating my birthday on the 4th of July. Then my folks had a real break when my little sister Josie made her entrance. She grew to love show business just as she loved everybody and everything. We toured the kerosene circuit on a tank show called Daniel Boone on the Trail. Everybody doubled in brass. Dad walloped the bass drum. For some reason, they teamed me with a donkey. I was a good Democrat even in those days. Mother and Josie threw out handbills. Their smiles would have sold tickets to wooden Indians.
Now a train chugs across a plain.
They kept putting new stars in the flag, and the Cohans kept rushing out to meet them. We had jokes to match every cornfield. We sang at every milk station.
Now a sign on a stage introduces Master George, violin tricks and tinkling tunes. About 8, he sways with a cane.
Larry O'Leary is my name by trade. I am a dancing master. There's no one can teach the same or teach it any faster. It's easy.
He wears a knicker suit like his dad's.
If you watch every twist, every turn, keep your eyes upon me and surprise you will be at the dancing you have yet to learn.
He doffs his hat and plays a violin on his head while he tap dances.
Keep your eyes upon me and surprise you will be at the dancing you have yet to learn.
He shoots an American flag out of his cane, smiles, and marches off stage. Later, a sign introduces little Josie Cohan, America's youngest skirt dancer. George's little sister comes on stage wearing a white dress with a full pleated skirt. It swirls around her feet as she takes small, graceful steps.
I was taken by surprise by a pair of roguish shy while strolling through the park one day.
Her parents beam.
We trooped through depression and inflation, part of the country's growing pains. Froze in winter and roasted in summer. But it was a good life. The lucky family that dances together every day.
In a vaudeville show, the Cohans dance together dressed as house servants in blackface. Grinning broadly, they swing tambourines side to side, then raise them over their heads. One by one, they hide their black faces behind the tambourines. With George in the lead, they make a train, tap the tambourines on their knees, then march off stage. Now a call board reads, closing notice.
1891 found our fortune flat as a pancake. Then came a bolt from the blue. Jobs for the whole family in a show called Peck's Bad Boy. We opened in Brooklyn. The town was known for its spirited audiences, even before it had a ball team.
Now, about 13, George hammers a star onto his door.
Hammering on our opening night. What are you doing here?
I'm the star of this play, ain't I?
Well, you have the leading part, yes.
That means I'm a star. And if I'm a star, there should be a star on my dressing room door. That's the law of the theater, Dad.
Yes, Jerry, give the devil his due.
I know, but I'm nervous. I'll go blank. I won't be able to remember a line.
Don't worry, Dad. If you stick, I'll throw you the line. And you too, Mother.
A program announces the four Cohans in Peck's Bad Boy. The synopsis lists the play's setting. Act 1 in Schultz Grocery Store. Act 2 in a rural grove 3 days later. Act 3 in Peck's living room. And now Act 4, back in Schultz Grocery Store. On stage, George swings from a chandelier and kicks the portly shopkeeper to the floor. Schultz hops up and George pelts him with eggs. In the balcony, the young audience heaves with laughter as George dumps a basket on the shopkeeper's head. The fat man tumbles backwards, spilling a box of flour. A policeman bursts into the store. George nails him with an egg, and a pipe falls on the officer's head. The audience roars. George peppers Schultz with eggs, then hops onto a barrel, cracking it wide open in a cloud of flour. George's parents rush into the store as the policeman grabs their son.
Jail you going, me boy?
Oh, there, there,
there now, Henry's not really a bad boy. He's just mischievous, that's all. Mr. Schultz, I think that should take care of the damage, don't you think?
Henry, I want you to promise our friend the cop and Mr. Schultz that from now on you'll always be a good boy.
I'll promise, but I can still lick any kid in town.
The boys in the audience wave their hands doubtfully as the curtain comes down, then goes back up. George and the cast take a bow. The curtain falls and the other players leave George alone, center stage. The curtain rises again and George bows twice. As he trots backstage, his father pats him on the shoulder.
Fine work, Georgie. Fine work.
Great, Georgie. Great.
Nice going, kid.
Real piece of acting there, Georgie.
And you're going places.
Boy, you sure hold him in the aisles.
Thanks. But what are you all so surprised about? You could have told during rehearsals that I'd be a sensation in this part. Listen, there's nothing to this acting business. I wonder what took me so long to become a star. Excuse me. Hey, Ben, call rehearsal for 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Jerry, the time has come for George's first spanking.
That's right, Nellie. I'll hold him while you hit him.
Well, not me. I'll hit hard enough to make an impression.
I can't do it. He'll think I'm jealous because he got more laughs than I did. Don't think I'm not either.
A stagehand finds George.
Several gentlemen to see you outside. Mr. Cohan.
Oh, gentlemen of the press, I presume. It started already. Will you excuse me?
George strides out a side door where a gang of boys waits.
Let's see your stuffy ears!
They hurl things at him, then tackle him down the stairs and pile onto him. Later, Nellie dabs the wounds on her son's face.
Not to be arrested, every one of those hoodlums. And it seems to me you're taking all this very calmly, Jerry Cohan. Your own son almost murdered in cold blood.
Well, the way I figure, it's a fine tribute to George's acting. The way he plays the part, every tough kid in America will want to take a punch at Peck's bad boy just to see what happens.
What? Have I got to go through that every night?
Yes, and matinees, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. Georgie, those boys did you a great favor. They saved me a lot of trouble. You know, most actors give their whole lives to their profession without once scoring a hit. You're lucky. You're a hit at the age of 13. I've been in this business a long time, and I've never met a performer who, in the long run, wouldn't rather be a great guy than a great actor. That is, until I made your acquaintance.
Can I be both?
Chances are, the way you're going, you won't be either. If the hoodlums don't get you, a committee of actors will. Actors are considered a very bad risk by insurance companies. And any actor with a conceit like yours, well, we just couldn't afford the premium.
What your father really means is you're too sensitive. You're too anxious to make good. You love the theater too much. Oh, I know you can improve. If you want to.
Sure I can. Just watch me. From now on, I'm Peck's bad boy only from 8:30 to 11 in the evening.
That's a boy, Georgie.
I promise, Mother.
And don't forget, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 2:30 till 5.
Yes, sir. And the other 21 and a half hours, I pattern myself after Dad.
He climbs into his lap.
I can find a better example, but that's the general idea.
A skinny guy enters.
Jerry, what do you know? Aunt Albie's coming backstage to see you.
Albie!
Yes. That's BFP's partner.
He's big time portable, Nellie. We're in the big time.
He didn't send for us. He's come here to see us.
It'd be better if I spoke business to him, Dad. Georgie, I thought you said you were going to reform.
I'm sorry.
Now listen, when he comes in here, I want you to keep quiet. Look at the condition of this dressing room.
Josie, get the cheap makeup off the table.
They hurriedly clean up.
Quick, Georgie!
Get the stuff off that shelf. That's right.
The stagehand enters.
Hey, Albie will be right in. He just stopped at the water cooler.
Jerry, if he offers you a cigar, don't take it.
I'll take it. It'll impress him if he thinks I can smoke.
Listen, you get behind that curtain.
But, Dad...
Hurry up. I don't want to hear a word out of you. I don't want to even hear you breathe.
Josie, fix the chairs. The other one.
Josie picks up a jacket, here, then this. Hides behind a screen with George.
Well, sit down, Nellie. Sit down.
All right.
Jerry sits next to his wife at a makeup table. Settling down, they primp their hair.
Come in.
Mr. E.F. Albee.
Hello, Cohan.
Albee. Meet Mrs. Cohan.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Sit down, Mr. Albee.
Thank you. I saw your show tonight. Not bad. Have a cigar?
Jerry hesitates.
No, thanks.
Of course, your show is no good for vaudeville, but I've seen a lot worse right here in Brooklyn. We're opening a new theater in Philadelphia, the Bijou, on the 4th of July. Now, if you can fix up a good vaudeville act, we'll double your present salary, give you 10 weeks guarantee, and third or fourth billing.
Double our salary?
You'll be with the best variety artists in the country. Vesta Victoria, Eddie Floyd, Warden Volk, Claudie Collins, Charlie Case.
Just a second. I'm George M. Cohan. You said you're opening a theater in Philadelphia on July 4th?
Yes, that's right.
That's my birthday.
That isn't why we're opening the theater.
The salary's all right. But how have you got the nerve to offer us third or fourth billing after my performance tonight?
Is this kid in your show?
Am I in the show? Who do you think was Peck's bad boy?
Oh, I beg your pardon. I didn't quite recognize you.
You didn't? Then maybe you're not the showman you're cracked up to be.
George.
Well, no, maybe I'm not. Maybe you're not quite ready for the big time yet.
Albie stands.
Mrs. Cohen. Mr. Cohen. Good night.
Mr. Albee.
Albee strides out.
How do you do, Mr. Albee?
Good evening, Mr. Albee.
Can I call you a carriage, Mr. Albee?
Yes, you will.
Carriage for Mr. Albee.
In the dressing room.
Now, you see what happens because you wouldn't lay a hand on him all these years?
Well, Mother isn't supposed to do any punishing. She just gives her permission.
Have I your permission?
You certainly have.
Jerry raises his hand.
Don't you think you ought to get my permission too, Dad?
Not on the hand, he has to play the violin.
All right, not on the hand.
Not on the mouth, he has to sing.
All right, not on the mouth. Come here.
Jerry slings George over his knee.
Here's one place without any talent.
He spanks his rear. Now the Cohans take a train.
Who were Lewis and Clark, George?
Acrobats? Look at the swell write-up we got in the Clipper.
Write-up?
You find us wherever new states sprouted on the prairie. We played every town in America that had a theater.
In a hotel.
Any mail for Mr. Cohan?
I know your father picked up his mail.
I mean for Mr. George M. Cohan.
The next 10 years rushed by like a circus train. Dad seemed content with the sticks, but I was straining at the leash.
There's your mail, Mr. Cohan.
Oh, thanks. A couple of tickets for the show. We were playing stock in Buffalo. And being versatile, I was playing my mother's father.
Oh, Daddy, he has left me.
All is for the best, my daughter. In life, we trip, but right ourselves.
I was correct about man's love. First, he considers his pleasure, or his honor, or his purse. And only secondly does he think of the woman he says he loves. Now I must go life's journey alone and struggle on my weary way to find peace.
Courage, Emily, courage. Living has taught your father many things. Among them, to take the bitter with the better. The road to happiness is paved with heartaches and stones.
The curtain falls. George, now a sturdy young man made up with wrinkles and a thick white beard, stands beside his mother for a bow as the curtain rises. Jerry joins them on stage, wearing a military uniform. When the curtain comes down again, the Cohans trot off stage, where Josie waits in a soft, flowing dress. They each give her a kiss.
They're all yours, sweetheart.
Good luck, honey.
Josie skips on stage, holding her full pleated skirt above her ankles. A ribbon holds her curled hair in a ponytail as she kicks her right leg high, then her left. Her skirt swirls through the air. Backstage, white-bearded George stretches in his crisp black suit. He stands on his hands, kicks his legs behind him, and lands on his feet. Standing tall, he arches his back and shoulders, then pulls each knee up to his chest. As he checks his woolly beard in a mirror, a stagehand enters.
Hey, George, there's a young lady. One of those stage-struck kids would like to talk to you.
Sure in.
All right, miss. Mr. Cohan will see you.
Thank you.
He's all yours.
A young woman with delicate features takes short, reserved steps inside. George primps his beard.
I'm 18. I sing and I dance and I'm going to New York. Should I? Oh, Mr. Cohan, you're so old and so experienced in the theater. So fatherly. Do you think it's wise? I mean, my being 18, singing and dancing, going to New York?
Well, that's very wise. I mean, being 18 is very wise. And as for New York, the four Cohans open there this fall with their new show, with a new cyclorama and two carloads of scenery.
Really? When are you leaving here?
Tomorrow night, right after the show.
Oh, I can't leave till Wednesday. Graduate from high school Tuesday.
Oh, that's too bad.
Oh, Georgie, excuse me. You haven't forgotten we have a date tonight, have you?
Oh, no, 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 of course not. We're going roller skating.
Roller skating on a night like this? Why, there's a moon out. I'll be ready in 5 minutes.
The shapely showgirl closes the door behind her.
Pipperino, isn't she?
Yes, is she your daughter?
No, I'm not married.
Your niece, perhaps.
Oh, she's just a kid with the show. We've been dating.
Isn't she a little too young for you?
Oh, no, she's getting along in years. She's 17.
The girl takes a sudden breath.
Well, shall I sing for you? I know I have talent, even if I am from Buffalo.
Well, we haven't got any piano handy.
Well, I'll dance.
She taps toe to heel, then clicks her heels in the air.
Well, that's rather old, isn't it? Everybody's done that. You don't want to be just an imitator, do you?
Oh, no. Here's a step I made up myself.
She sweeps her foot forward, then kicks it back.
But on the other hand, you don't want to be too original either, do you?
No.
Well, I'll tell you what you do. You sit right here. You sit right here, and I will give you an idea of what I mean. It may not be much. I'm not the dancer I used to be. But then, who is? Now, watch carefully, now.
He taps wildly.
Oh, no, no!
Looks like it.
Oh, but you're hard!
With each quick step, he twists his foot and stamps the ground.
My heart is every bit as good as it ever was.
He spins, clicks his heels, then stumbles back.
So fast! Such excitement!
What?
Your age! Down a red.
Maybe I have overdone it a little.
Look at the perspiration on your brow.
She wipes his forehead.
Your wrinkles! What happened to your wrinkles?
Well, I do have to make up older than I actually am, you know.
How old are you?
Not yet 70.
You seem different from when I first came in. Even your voice sounds younger.
Well, you see, it's a gift I have. I'm always as young as the people I'm with. And you've made me feel very young. Very young.
I'm glad.
Well, now, let's make plans. Which manager shall I take you to see first? Claude Erlanger? Good old Abe's, very nice fella, but maybe a little bit too soon.
She gapes as he peels off his bushy eyebrows and mustache.
Albee and Costner and Beale and Proctor.
Oh!
She rips off his beard.
Oh! Now, wait a minute, little girl. You're not going to let an old white beard and a couple of eyebrows frighten you, are you? If you're going into show business, you're going to see a lot of those.
I'm not so sure I want to go into show business now.
What, a girl with your talent and ability? There are very few around who can sing and dance and act, too.
How do you know I can do all those things? You've never seen me.
I don't have to see you. I can tell a trooper a mile away, right on sight. Besides, I feel as though I've known you for years. What's your name?
Mary.
That's a very pretty name, a very pretty name. Now, Mary, you calm down. Let's go and have a bite to eat, huh? I always eat after the last show. You hungry?
Oh, yes, I've been sitting in the theater since 2 o'clock this afternoon trying to get up courage to come backstage.
You must be hungry after 7 shows. We'll have a nice cold bottle and a bird.
What's a cold bottle?
Well, that's what we in show business call a piece of pie and a glass of milk.
Aren't you going roller skating with that Piperino?
No, I'm tired of picking her up.
He takes off his wig. She swats it off her lap and he stomps on it. On stage, the four Cohans stroll by a plantation house in elegant costumes.
I was born in Virginia. That's the state that will win ya. If you got a soul in ya, ain't no southern frown. In the city of Norfolk, home of beauties and war talk.
Reckon you'll like it
if you should strike at that doggone town.
George and Josie hop and freeze in a pose. Their parents do the same. George breaks away from the others, swinging his legs in a series of straight kicks. Light on his feet, he trots across the stage, and Josie joins him in a delicate bit. Smiling, they fall in line and twirl with their parents. Off stage, a bespectacled, tuxedo-clad gentleman and a stagehand watch.
Pretty good. There's a contract in my desk already made out. Go and get it. Say. If any of the four commands ask you how you like their act, just tell them it was fair.
I get you.
Jerry and his wife shuffle forward in a zigzagging tap. As they tap their way back, Josie spins center stage. Her black satin dress clings to her swaying hips. She shuffles backward, and George hoofs into the spotlight. Off stage, Mary watches. George flashes her a broad grin. Then he throws his arm to his side and kicks his heel her way as if passing her something. Mary covers up her shy smile. George cuts a series of swift, crisscrossing steps, then takes his mother's arm.
Reckon you'll like it if you can strike at that doggone town.
They stroll off stage, then trot back into the spotlight. In unison, they take a bow. Jerry steps forward, then shrugs his brow and waves his son center stage. George points to himself in surprise, then steps forward and smiles at the audience.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you,
My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.
The four Cohans take a last bow, then trot off stage, where other acts and stagehands linger.
Nice
going, Joe. Let's turn
them
out of the chairs.
Go all set up for you, boys. Go get them.
Oh, Dad, after the way we went tonight, we're certainly ready for New York.
Tough audience. If we're ahead here, it's a cinch in New York.
Nice going, Chris.
Oh, Mr. Cohan.
Just a minute.
The tuxedo-clad gentleman.
Pretty fair act you folks have got.
Well, they seem to like it all right.
That's a soft audience. Got any open time?
Yes, from now on.
I'd like to make you a little offer.
I'd be glad to talk about it.
Fine, fine. You know, they're always a soft audience here on Wednesday. Pushover.
Now George sneaks up behind Mary. She beams.
Did you catch it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you were wonderful, George. But I don't know. I missed that beard.
Mm-hmm. Did you get up on that number?
Yes, it's a lovely song, George. I've learned it by heart.
Good. I rehearsed it with the orchestra leader, and you do with this show. He knows your key, and you just follow him for tempo.
But there's a notice on the call board. You can't change your act after the first show. And the manager expects me to sing The Wedding of the Lily and the Rose.
The manager. Who are they applauding out there, the manager or me? Now go on out there and do it.
Oh, George, I can't move. I can't go out there, not without rehearsal.
What are you worried about? You're doing a George M. Cohan lyric to a George M. Cohan melody.
Yes, but it's my voice.
A George M. Cohan discovery. Nobody ever had a better start. Agent introduction. Go on.
George gently pushes her toward the stage. Mary, wearing a ruffled hugging dress and a bonnet, glances nervously back at him. George nudges her into the spotlight. She smiles and starts to bob in rhythm.
When they see you coming, all them babies take a chill. Diamonds glistening all around and style enough to kill. Her steady fella broke a dice game down in Louisville and buys her chicken every day for lunch. Come seven. Dreamy eyes that sparkle and she rolls them mighty cute. Colored gentlemen say that lady certainly is a beaut. Go broke that she's a hot potato. She's a red hot radiator. She's the warmest baby in the bunch.
Backstage, the tuxedo clad manager meets with Jerry, Nellie, and their daughter.
10 consecutive weeks in New York. That's the big time. When you leave New York, Philadelphia, Boston, Chicago.
Let me take a look at it.
Excuse me. What's going on here? Take your makeup off. I'll be back in just a minute.
The manager watches Mary and frowns.
That lady certainly is a beaut. Go broke that she's a hot potato. She's a red hot potato.
Hey, Bill. What is this? What's she singing? Who told her to switch that number? She's supposed to be singing The Wedding of the Lily and the Rose. Now, who told her to switch that number?
I don't know.
You don't know. Bring down that curtain. Pull out the house lights. As soon as she finishes the chorus, pull out the house lights.
Wait a second. Give her a chance. See how that song goes.
See how the song goes? The song is gone. Pull out the lights.
Oh, don't do it, Charlie.
Say, who does she think she is? Who does she think is running this theater? What does she mean by changing her number? The only reason I put her on was because the dog act got drunk.
He'll be all right in the morning.
Oh, she was your idea.
And a very good idea, too.
Now I know who got the dog act drunk.
Who, me? Well, I've never been in a saloon in my life.
On stage, Mary winks at George.
Her steady fella broke a dice game down in Louisville and buys her chicken.
Look, could you ask for anything more than that? Huh?
George playfully slaps the manager's cheeks.
Oh, don't do that! Don't do that! Pull out the lights. Pull down that curtain.
The curtain drops in front of Mary.
Get your brows together. You're on next. Hey, boys, start limbering up. You follow the jugglers.
You get that curtain up. You can't ring down on a George M. Cohan song.
George, it's... Oh, I see. Oh, it's your song. You wrote it.
You can tell that by the applause. Now, Mary, I want you to go out there and do an encore. Do one more chorus and really do it.
Yeah, oh, no. No, you don't. Young lady, listen. If you're going to be trying out any junk like that, you'll do it on a split beat time, but you'll not be singing songs like that in my theater. Now, you take a little tip from me, you start packing.
Beeler, if you've got any squawks, you unload them on me. I'm the one that started all this.
Listen, Squirt, any more interference on your part, and you'll be blacklisted in show business. You won't even be able to get into a stage door of any theater in this country. And what's more, as for those songs of yours, they won't even be played on a hurdy-gurdy's.
Are you trying to threaten me?
Mary runs off in tears.
Don't pay any attention. Here now. You
get me the key to your dressing room. Drunk or sober, the dog act goes down on the next show. And look here.
George slaps his back, then kicks him into a pair of acrobats. They all tumble, pulling down a backdrop. George plops a silly hat on the manager's head.
Cohan, you're fired. You're canceled. You're washed up. You and your whole family.
Oh, things were tough. But at least I was in New York. I had a trunk full of songs and play scripts and a heart full of confidence. I'm glad I had it.
Now a music publisher.
I'm sorry, I can't use this, Cohan.
Youth needs confidence. I'd learned my job the hard way, all over the United States. And now guys who had never been past the corner cigar store were saying my stuff was no good. A kid had to believe in himself to buck that.
Now, in the waiting room of Dietz and Goff Theatrical Enterprises, three performers sulk away from the reception desk while a slick-haired man with a pencil-thin mustache reads a manuscript. In an office, Mary wrings her hands as George sits a man down with sheet music, then lights another man's cigar.
Who is the man who will spend or will even lend?
Harrigan!
That's me.
Who is your friend when you find that you need a friend? Harrigan!
That's me. I am just as proud of me name, you see, as an emperor, czar, or king could be. Who is the man that helps a man every time he can?
Harrigan!
That's me.
H-A-W-R-I. G-A-N spelled Harrigan.
Proud of all the Irish blood that's in me. And give it a man can say a word again me. H-A-W-R-I.
G-A-N-U-C.
Is a name that a shame never has been connected with.
Harrigan.
That's me.
Arm in arm, Mary and George step lightly.
G-A-N spells Harrigan.
The cigar-smoking man heaves a breath while his partner slouches in his chair, pressing his lips together.
Say a word again, me. H-A-R-R-I-G-A-N-U-C is the name that a shame never has been connected with. Harrigan.
That's me.
Well, what do you think?
I didn't like it. Didn't appeal to me.
What do you mean it didn't appeal to you? I'm the senior partner around here. I make the decisions.
Well, what did you think?
It didn't appeal to me either. Which proved, gentlemen, that you have no ear for music. He's got no ear for music. I'm the senior partner. I have a wonderful ear for music.
But what about the libretto? It's a grand story, isn't it?
I laughed all the way through it.
That's my cue. If Harold laughs, then I know it isn't funny.
Why don't you have Mr. Cohen sing the rest of the score for you? Maybe you just didn't like Harrigan because I haven't got much of a voice.
Oh, I think you have a lovely voice. Don't you think so, Mr. Dietz?
Yes, you have a very nice voice. In fact, if you'd like a job answering our phone...
Are you or are you not going to produce my play?
If you think I'd put any of my wife's money into that trash, you're crazy. That's it, Mary. That's enough. They've had their chance.
In the waiting room.
Have you an appointment?
Yes, my name's Sam Harris. I want to see them about this melodrama I have.
Sam, the slick-haired man, glimpses George leaving the office.
You don't know it, boys, but your days are numbered. You're making room for the likes of me. And someday, Mr. Senior Partner, you're going to come to me and admit you were wrong.
In 20 years of show business, I never once admitted I was wrong. That's his department.
And as for your wife's money...
Excuse me. I have an appointment.
Who are you?
My name's Sam Harris. I have a melodrama here that I have called Wildflower.
Wildflower.
Goff slams the door, and Dietz opens Sam's play.
Horses?
Oh, and Indians.
Uh-oh. In the waiting room.
Now, Mary, don't let a couple of Gilpins like that get under your skin. There's no sense in crying now.
Buffalo is such a beautiful city.
Is that what you're crying about?
It's a beautiful city, but I hate to go back to it.
Don't worry, you won't have to. I'll show them yet. I'm going to have my name posted and plastered up and down Broadway until I'm as well known as Hood Sarsaparilla. And if you stick along, we'll whip them to a standstill. We'll take them like Grand Duke Richmond.
I never really thought of leaving, George.
We'll make this whole theatrical business sit up and holler for help. That's what we'll do. They'll all hear from us, every one of them. They'll all hear from us.
I'm the senior partner here. I'll do the throwing out.
Wait a minute. You don't have to throw me out. I know the way.
The last time I'll ever bring you a play.
Dietz yanks the script from Goff.
That's my department.
He throws it at Sam.
We'll take it to Clara and Erlinger. They don't always think of box office.
George Thanks. Picks up the play for Sam.
Too expensive.
Didn't even read the second act. Probably the biggest forest fire that was ever staged.
Sam stalks out.
I think he's a little upset.
George glances at his pocket watch.
5:30. We'd have done 8 shows by this time in Buffalo.
Now in the dining room of Madame Bartholdi's boarding house, offering special rates to the theatrical profession.
The juggler just said 3 weeks back board.
Oh, put him at the head of the table so he doesn't have to reach for everything.
Where shall I put the magician?
Until he's paired up, he sits at the foot of the table with the Kohan.
Oh, starvation corner.
And put the goulash at the head of the table and keep everything but the noodles and the maple syrup out of the reach of the Kohan.
Noodles and syrup are just enough to keep him alive.
Anybody who owes me 2 months board bill, I just keep alive. I don't have to wait on them.
The dinner bells sway as Madame Bartholdi watches her guests sit at the table.
Evening, madam.
Oh, no. Now. No, from now on, this is your seat.
Oh, thank you.
And you, Master Magician, you sit over there with the Kohan.
Madam, someday I hope you will give me the pleasure of sawing you in half.
I just heard today that Hammerstein was bringing over the Scotch actor, Harry Lauder, at $2,500 a week.
Hammerstein's a great showman. A lot of people have never seen a Scotchman.
Take some goulash, Mrs. Cohen.
Madam takes it away.
Did you have an appointment this afternoon with that man about your booking?
Appointment? Oh, yes. He's going to get work to the act any day now.
What happened to that Boston offer you got? That was a mighty sweet proposition. 4 weeks guarantee, $300 a week and top billing.
Well, we didn't take it. See, it just wasn't right.
Any act that lays off as long as you have, any offer's all right.
Butter? We just thought we'd rest a few more weeks.
Yes, you see, my brother's writing some new material for us. Well, we're just not ready to open.
In the hall, George listens somberly.
Anybody, folks. Everybody knows that you and Nellie and Josie can get work anytime, anyplace. But nobody wants Georgie.
Sure, he's made trouble in every theater this side of San Francisco.
You can't lay off the rest of your life just because every manager in town has blackballed Georgie.
His family hasn't blackballed him. We may have to take a lot of hard knocks and make a lot of sacrifices, but if they want our act, they'll have to take him, too. We're not breaking up our act or our family.
And all right.
George strides in, smiling.
Madam Holly, champagne for everybody.
He kisses his sister.
Well. Even if I had it, who would pay for it?
Dietz and Goff. They're producing Little Johnny Jones.
Oh, George, really?
George, not
yeah?
really.
They went crazy about the book, and when Dietz heard the music, he said, to heck with his wife's money, he's going to use his own.
The second round of champagne on me, if you had any. Pass that goulash down to this end of the table.
Madame Bartholdi serves the Cohans goulash.
Think of those billboards. Book, music, and lyrics, all by George M. Cohan. Oh, Georgie, I...
Oh, now, take it easy, Josie. There's enough water on the goulash now. Dad, I'm going to be tied up in rehearsal for the next few months, so why don't you and Mom and Josie take whatever offers in the meantime to fill in?
Well, I hate to see the act split up, George, but if you think so...
Oh, sure. You can play all that stuff around Chicago for Sullivan. The money's good and the jumps are short.
It's a good idea. You get tired resting too long.
Hmm.
But it won't be the same going back on the road without you, Georgie. Why... We'll be like a carriage with only three wheels.
But you will admit I was kind of a bumpy wheel. You'll roll along a whole lot easier without me.
Oh, no, Georgie, no.
Oh, but you will.
If there's a part in your play for a bicycle rider, I used to be known as Venus on Wheels.
Mm-hmm. I always knew you weren't a cook.
He smiles at Madame Bartholdi. Now, at Jack's Grill, George fills his plate from a buffet table, then sits at the bar.
How's everything going, George?
Not so good, kid, not so good. I've been pounding the pavement so long, my socks have bunions.
Slick-haired Sam sits at a table with a jowly man.
Now, the villain turns to the boy and says, I'll tell the girl who you are unless you help me hold up this train. Think fast, it's due in 10 minutes. You'll have the audience standing in their seats with excitement.
I know. The hero helps him, gets shot in the leg. And the girl nurses him back to us.
No, he gets shot in the arm, Mr. Schwab, not the leg. Do you know what happens next?
I won't be in the theater to find out. I will be down the street watching a musical comedy. Before I put $10,000 into a show, it must have songs, dancers, and a lot of girls.
George eavesdrops.
Women, little rose petals.
Now, the big scene is where the hero saves the girl from a burning forest fire. It won't be terribly expensive, Mr. Schwab. I know where I can get a cheap fire.
You don't need much of a fire. Just enough to burn that manuscript.
Oh, here you are. I've been looking all over town for you.
What?
Come on, we've got to go over to Dietz and Goff and sign those papers.
Papers?
What papers?
What papers?
Oh, I see you don't want to talk about it in front of Mr. Schwab. Say, you haven't discussed our musical with Mr. Schwab.
Musical?
Remember what we promised Dietz and Goff?
Believe me, I haven't said a word about a musical.
That's good, because Dietz said it's the best musical he's ever read. He even allowed Goff to agree with him. When I told him about those 20 ponies and 20 showgirls all coming downstage...
Oh, ponies and showgirls?
Just a minute, young fellow. Would you mind telling me what you're talking about?
Wait, I've got to check for this table.
Yes, sir. No, that's mine.
Oh, no,
Sam
no.
gapes as George gives the bill to Schwab.
Better mention, Mr. Schwab.
That's mine.
Come on, we can't keep these waiting.
Schwab stops them.
You have girls up your sleeve, you have ponies and showgirls, and you don't tell me about it. What's it about?
We gave our word to Dietz.
We haven't got time for details. It's about Todd Sloan in London.
The famous jockey.
Yeah, come on, partner.
Jockey sounds well. Just my luck to miss out on it. Well, good luck, boys.
As they leave, George cues Sam to leave his play on the table.
Oh, you forgot your manuscript. Oh, say, yeah. Before we sign up with Dietz and Goff, I made some change in the lyric of Yankee Doodle. I want you to hear it.
Yankee Doodle?
But you shouldn't have done that. It was perfect the way it was.
Oh, you're going to like this. Give the number added value.
May I listen a little?
Well, think we should?
I don't know. Huh?
If you promise to be quiet...
I promise.
All right. Come on. There's a piano in the private room.
Yankee Doodle.
Schwab follows them.
Uh-huh. Yankee Doodle Kennedy.
Dandy. Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yankee Doodle Dandy.
George
Kennedy.
Sits at the piano.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yankee Doodle, do or die. A real live nephew of my Uncle Sam, born on the 4th of July. I've got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart. She's my Yankee Doodle joy. Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the ponies. I am that Yankee Doodle boy.
Hiya, prisoner. I will never forgive you for trying to palm over forest fire on me when you had that music law all the time.
Yes, but we gave our word to Dietz.
I can't understand it. Why is Dietz's wife's money better than my wife's money? Why?
Sam cocks an eyebrow.
Must you give it to Dietz and Kaff? Must you give it?
Well, I don't know. I like Dietz, but I'm not too fond of Goff. I'm crazy about Goff, but I've got a use for Dietz.
Gentlemen, you are in perfect agreement. I will give you a check to bank the deal.
Sam yes. Hurriedly grabs a pen.
Thank you. What's your partner's name?
I don't know.
What's my partner's name?
Well, don't toy with the kid at a time like this. Tell him. George M. Cohan. George M. Cohan, C-O-H-A-N. And what is my junior partner's name?
Sam H. Harris Shake.
Hello? What should I write?
Cohan and Harris.
Cohan and...
Mm-hmm.
George Harris? Kisses Schwab's derby. Now a conductor opens the music score for George M. Cohan's Little Johnny Jones, the Yankee Doodle Boy. On an elaborate set like a racetrack, swank ladies and gentlemen place their bets. George, clad in a striped suit and tweed cap, stands by a thoroughbred.
I'm the kid that's all the candy. I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. I'm glad I am. I'm a real-life Yankee Doodle, made my name and fame and boodle, just as Mr. Doodle did by riding on a pony. I love to listen to the Dixie strain. I long to see the girl I left behind me. That ain't a Josh. She's a Yankee, by gosh. Anything about a Yankee, that's all for me.
Little Johnny Jones, the jockey from the USA.
We'll ride the pony, Yankee Doodle, English Derby Day.
Jonesy's broken records every track at every beat.
So Yankee Doodle's gonna be the boy they have to beat.
Sportsmen of the British House who followed his career have offered Johnny anything to keep him over here.
But all the money in the Bank of England couldn't pay enough to keep young Johnny Jones away from old Broadway.
If you want to take a trip, the surest of sure things.
Have your houses mortgaged, hop your watches, pawn your rings.
And put it all on Yankee Doodle, Johnny Jones is up.
I'm gonna give America the English Derby Cup.
He's gonna give America the English Derby Cup.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Yankee Doodle do or die. A real live nephew of my Uncle Sam, born on the 4th of July. I've got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart. She's my Yankee Doodle joy. Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the ponies. I am that Yankee Doodle boy.
He's a Yankee Doodle man.
As George struts straight-legged across the stage, the chorus marches with him. The women wear flowing silk dresses and carry parasols, while the men sport racing silks. They kick from side to side, then hop up and down, pumping their arms as though riding horses. In the spotlight, George rocks sprightly forward on his toes. Swinging his arms, he swaggers, leaps up, and clicks his heels. Mirrored by the chorus, he skips left, then claps his feet in the air and taps in place. George twirls around, then jumps and scissors his feet. Bounding across the stage, he kicks off the wall and springs back in an acrobatic turn. George dashes into a clubhouse, then eight jockeys carry saddled sawhorses front and center. In unison, they spin, arcing their legs over the saddles, then jump the sawhorses. They line up in a row and lean on them as they click their heels from side to side, then leapfrog the saddles. As they spring up from a squat, their leather boots kick the air. George comes out of the clubhouse in racing silks, and they carry their sawhorses away.
Good luck, Johnny. Success to you. All the best of the best to you. We'll make our bets and leave the rest to you, 'cause you've got what it takes to win.
George mounts his black horse and rides off stage. Now a man peers through binoculars over the chorus.
There they are, going to the post, all in good condition. That's Yankee Doodle on the end, a wonderful position. Look at him rear, he's broken line, he's simply wild to run. Now they're back in line again, there's the starting gun.
Come on, Yankee Doodle, we have got the whole caboodle on you. Run, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up.
Yankee takes the lead.
Come on, break away, they're short of powder, burn their hay, they're hot to run. Hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, show a little speed.
At the quarter, he's gaining, at the turn now, he's reining his horse.
Go, 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 hold it back, let it go.
At the half mark, he's cruising, but seems to be losing his lead.
Hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, you simply have to win.
He'll never win, he'll never win. The other nags are closing in. He's gone to third from second place.
It looks as though he's found the race.
They've got him in a pocket. He can't get in the clear. They're in the stretch. Here they come. He's falling to the rear.
He's lost the race, but it's a fright.
He'll find a blighter who's to blame and clear the name of little Johnny Jones.
George mopes behind the winner.
Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. It's all over. Yankee Doodle let him down. So they'll either pasture him in clover or have him hauling rubbish at London Town.
Goodbye, Johnny, we're through with you.
The crowd turns away as George sadly passes. Two officials tap him on the shoulder.
You've been dishonest, and we find that you be suspended for throwing the race.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Yankee Doodle, do or die. Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the ponies. I am that Yankee Doodle.
He disappears into the clubhouse.
For he was that Yankee Doodle boy.
The curtain falls. Sam and Schwab wait backstage.
Give me little rose petals.
Oh, it's going wonderful, George. You got them eaten right out of your hand.
My congratulations.
Thanks, Sam. It'll be great as long as those critics don't start eating off my leg.
Oh, don't worry about the critics. You got a smash hit. It's in the air, kid. It's in the air. You can't stop anything. It's in the air.
The house lights dim and the curtain rises. On a pier in front of a docked ocean liner, the chorus girls step from side to side, swishing their soft, pleated skirts through the air. They twirl, then put their hands behind their backs and high-kick their way into a long, straight line. Wearing boater hats and blouses with bows, they huddle together, rest their hands on their knees, and rock their heads. Mary smiles in the front row.
Of old New York.
Broadway lights, a million dancing lights, thrilling sights everywhere you walk. London town, we're bidding you adieu. See, we hate to say goodbye to you.
Black-capped stewards carrying trunks and flowers trot up the gangplank with the chorus girls. A derby-hatted gentleman escorts George to the ship.
All right, on the boat. Now remember, Jones, watch for the skyrocket. If it goes off, you'll know that I've obtained certain papers from Anstey's cabin that'll prove you innocent of throwing the English Derby. It'll mean complete vindication. So stick here on the pier and watch for the skyrocket.
Thanks, pal. I'll be watching.
They shake hands, then jog up the gangplank. At the top, George approaches a chorus girl, then notices Mary gazing over the railing and touches her hand.
Goodbye, Johnny, and don't worry. We still believe in you.
Thanks, kid. That'll help a lot. Goodbye.
He kisses her cheek, then strides back down the gangplank, wearing his striped suit and tweed cap. Bobbies and well-wishers sway as George takes the spotlight.
Give my regards to Broadway. Remember me to Herald Square. Tell all the gang at 42nd Street that I will soon be there. Whisper of how I'm yearning.
Mary blows him a kiss.
With that old time throng. Give my regards to old Broadway and say that I'll be there ere long.
The ship starts to move.
Give your regards to Broadway.
ship pulls away, Mary and the derby-hatted gentleman squeeze through the crowd to the back railing and wave to George. He throws them a kiss. Dim, plunging the pier into darkness as George leans on a piling, his lips drawn in a sad, troubled frown. The ocean liner cruises the moonlit sea behind him. Strolling away, he dons his cap, buttons his suit coat, and sinks his hands into his pockets. Soars into the sky and explodes over the water in a shower of sparks. George beams. George merrily hoofs a circle, then grapevines, and does a low scissor kick. Grinning, he knocks his heels on a barrel. He spins across the pier and springs onto a crate. Hopping down, he bounces along with quick, nimble steps. The backdrop ocean stretches behind him. As he twirls in a wide circle, the spotlight follows. George leaps onto the edge of the pier and lurches forward precariously. He jumps down and whirls around the pier. He spins a fast, tight circle, then freezes, reaching toward the audience. The curtain falls. In the back of the theater, Goff claps beside his frowning partner, Dietz. Dietz slaps Goff's top hat over his eyes.
That was your department.
Now Josie and her parents in a train station.
Is it the robin that heralds the first breath of spring?
How can you think of robins in the spring when we're freezing to death in Illinois?
Hey, Jerry, did you see the way they're billing you in Waukegan?
Come here. Look at that.
Funny, isn't it?
Jerry and Ellie and Josie Cohan. Family of George M. Cohan, the new Broadway sensation.
Hey, the kid's doing all right, isn't he?
Hey, look at that.
Jerry shows his wife the newspaper.
Well, that's true. He is the biggest thing on Broadway.
Yeah, I know, but it ain't right. We've got to go to act and we'll build our own reputation. We'll be billed as we should be billed, the three Cohans.
All right, no need to get excited.
Listen, don't think I'm jealous of George's success, even though I am a better actor.
Of course you're not jealous. Everybody knows that.
Oh, there'll be no stopping George. All he needs is a little more experience, and he'll be a genius.
He must know that I'm a better actor. It might interfere with him becoming a genius.
Still, it does look a little funny. George being the toast of Broadway, and you folks gathering a few crumbs in the tank towns.
Is either of you fellas Jerry Cohan?
I am.
Lightning flashes on the wall. Jerry goes to the ticket window where a clerk hands him a telegram. Reading it, he strolls back to his wife and daughter.
For George.
Impossible to find three clever actors named Cohan for my new show anywhere in New York. Return immediately for rehearsal.
What did I tell you?
The four of us back together again. And on Broadway.
Now a playbill boasts the four Cohans. The family strolls on stage arm in arm.
Oh, you wonderful girl. What a wonderful girl you are. You made the world appear to me, near to me. Dear to me.
The four Cohans appear at the Majestic.
Praise God, Main Street on Broadway skies.
Under December on Main skies, I'll be true to you.
At the Opera House.
Everybody's going to the Barber's Ball. There ain't gonna be any sleep at all until the stars are gone, until the break of dawn. We're gonna dance at the Barber's Ball.
At Mary's.
Even in the kitchen you sound like a tetrazzini.
In Buffalo, they say I have a nice little voice.
What they know in Buffalo. In Buffalo, they thought I was an old man.
Mary fixes tea.
Well, how do you like your part so far?
Oh, I like it. I like it because it's small. I'd be afraid to try anything bigger.
Well, you've got something on the leading lady. You got the best song on the show. Here it is. It's finished. Come on.
Well, what about the lyrics?
Don't give it to you now. Sit down and give me a pickup.
Mary sits at the piano while George pours himself a cup of tea.
My mother's name was Mary.
She was so good and true. Because her name was Mary, she called me Mary too. She wasn't gay or airy, but plain as she could be. I'd hate to meet a Mary who called herself Marie. For it is Mary, Mary, plain as any name can be, but with propriety, society will say, Marie. But it was Mary, Mary, long before the fashions came. And there is something there that sounds so square. It's a grand old name.
He sits beside her.
For it is Mary, Mary, plain as any name can be. But with propriety, society will say, Mary. But it was Mary, Mary, long before the fashions came. And there is something there that sounds so square. It's a grand old name.
He hands her a cup of tea.
Yeah. Gee, I never cared much for my name before. It was kind of common. Gee, there are millions of Marys around.
But I didn't write it for the millions of Marys. I wrote it for one particular, very special Mary.
It's a wonderful feeling having your name written in music.
And not bad music either, huh?
Nope, it isn't. But how will everybody know that I'm the Mary? I want to make sure that everybody knows it was written for me.
They'll know all right. When they look at you singing that song and look at me looking at you, they'll know.
Oh, George.
Take that up an octave.
George!
Sam enters.
Excuse me for butting in. I've been looking all over town for you. Strange that I should find you here. Hello, Mary.
Mr. Harris, what do you think? George has just written a new song for me to sing at a show. Think I'll be able to do it?
Why, of course. You've got a nice little voice.
That is not a little voice, and you need an ear trumpet.
Come on, we've got to get over to the Lyceum. We've got to see Faith Templeton before she goes on.
Hey, Templeton, what does she want to see us about?
She doesn't want to see us. We want to see her. You need a leading lady for your new show. You've got your angel.
Sure.
Hey, Templeton, it's not bad. She can do 2 years in the turkey she's in now. She can do 4 for us. Think she'll take it?
I don't know, but at least it'll give you a chance to get her autograph.
Or for her to get mine.
Why don't you bring her back to supper after the show?
Well, if she's still speaking to us.
Sam and George leave. Now a glowing marquee announces Faye Templeton in A Little Bit of Everything. A carriage stops in front of the theater. As Sam and George climb out, a gypsy approaches them.
Yeah. Would you like to buy it?
Sam gives her money.
Well, George, there's one thing in our favor. Erlang is on our side. He's got a lot of influence with Miss Templeton.
Well, you talk to Erlang and I'll tackle Templeton.
Listen, George, you don't tackle a star like Miss Templeton. You approach her, and very tactfully, too.
But if a tack that does it, done.
Inside, Dietz holds a huge bouquet.
If you get me in to see Miss Templeton, I'll get you 2 passes to my next show.
Look, Dietz. Looks naked without garb.
Yeah. Where's Miss Templeton's dressing room? Upstairs.
Now, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to see to it that Miss Templeton gets your flowers. My respects to Mrs. Dietz.
He hands him one rose.
Now, that was a very sweet gesture.
But you've got to remember, Faye, we're having a tough time lining up a vehicle for you. Now, you should listen to this man. He's just written a big hit.
One hit. He may be a flash in the pan for all we know. And I heard about little Johnny Jones, and I read the critics of all the loud, vulgar flag-waving.
Well, it was a wow. I haven't laughed so much in years. The fellow's got the golden touch.
Maybe so, but not for me, Mr. Erlanger. What I want is a quiet, dignified musical play. I want to perform in a theater, not a boiler factory.
Come in.
Hello, Harris.
How are you, Cohen?
Hello, Abe.
Everything's all right, as you see.
Faye,
may I present Mr. Harris?
How do you do?
And, Faye, this is Mr. Cohen, George M. Cohen.
How do you do?
You know, we were just talking about you, George. Miss Temple has never seen you work.
Been sick or in Europe?
Sam nudges George. Miss Templeton glares at Erlanger.
No. I've been right here on this stage for 2 years.
Oh, buried. Don't misunderstand me, Miss Templeton. I've never been at a loss for words before, but right now, standing here in your presence, why, I hardly... Well,
I prefer to have these flowers speak for me.
Why, Mr. Cohen, how sweet of you.
Oh, it's not that. Oh, something I thought
excuse
of.
Excuse me for breaking in on you like this, Miss Templeton, but I would like to present my own flowers my own way.
But, Mr. Cohen, I thought...
Drunk.
Is he?
May I have the honor of supping with you at breakfast tonight after the show and drinking champagne out of your... Pardon me, slipper?
Excuse me, Mr. Deeds. Haven't you forgotten that your junior partner, Mr. Goff, does all the drinking?
Yes, but on special occasions, I take over.
May I have the honor of putting these in water for you?
Well, really,
I never saw Deeds drunk before.
Shall we get down to business?
If you like, Abe.
Well, George, how would you like to do a play with one of the biggest stars in America?
What do you think I've been doing?
You see what I mean, Faye? Isn't he a card?
Positively a riot.
Yes. George, what's your new story like? That is, I mean, can you write a play without a flag?
Miss Templeton, I can write a play without anything except a pencil. Laugh. Well, look, the
There's
first act...
There's really no use discussing anything. I'm afraid I would never please the sort of people who revel in your antics and fireworks.
Oh, you're just being modest, Miss Templeton. If you let yourself go, you'd be just as noisy and entertaining as the rest of us. You might even have some fun yourself.
Abe, isn't it about time for the curtain to go up?
But look, Miss Templeton, if you haven't got time now, maybe you'll give us a few minutes after the show.
I'm sorry. After the show, I'm going home to New Rochelle. It's only 45 minutes from here. But thank heavens, it's like 1,000 miles from all the noisy, neurotic people one has to associate with in our profession.
Oh, now, Miss Templeton, now...
Faye, I want to...
That tact of yours, that wonderful tact.
George stares at the door, then taps Sam on the cheek.
What are you thinking about?
George leads him across the room. On stage, Miss Templeton raises a feathered fan in the air. As the curtain closes, she strides off stage, smiling. Erlanger waits in the wing.
Well, have you thought it over, Faye?
I'm not interested in Mr. Cohen or his play.
Well, now you're making a great mistake, Faye. He's the most original thing that ever hit Broadway. You know why? Because it's the whole darn country squeezed into one pair of pants. His writing, his song, why, even his walk and his talk. They all touch something way down here in people. And don't ask me why it is, but it happens every time the curtain goes up. It's pure magic.
I'm bored by magic. I know his formula. A fresh young sprout gets rich between 8:30 and 11 p.m.
Yes, that's just it, Faye. George M. Cohan has invented the success story, and every American loves it because it happens to be his own private dream. He's found the mainspring in the Yankee clock. Ambition, pride, patriotism. That's why they call him the Yankee Doodle Boy. If you'll take a tip from me, Faye, you'll do just what I'm doing. You'll hit your wagon to his star right now.
Abe, I've got to change for the second act.
She goes upstairs.
Now, Faye, don't make up your mind too quickly. Take a little time to think it over.
Who's you locked my door?
Who is it?
What's going on here?
He'll be through in a minute. Excuse me, Miss Templeton. I beg your pardon. I didn't realize who you were. Come in.
May I?
Well, of course.
What does this mean? Would you mind telling me why you're still here?
Well, here it is, ready and waiting and dedicated to you.
What?
Well, when you made that exit speech, you said you lived only 45 minutes in Broadway. Well, that struck me as being a perfect title for a show and a perfect title for a song.
You mean to say that during the first act you've written this new song?
Well, strange surrounding. That's why it took me so long.
He's worked so hard, Miss Templeton, the least you can do is to hear it.
Yeah, it'll only take a minute, won't it, George?
Depends on the encores.
Well, you certainly are persistent. All right, go ahead. Mind if I change?
Oh, thank you, Miss Templeton. That's wonderful of you. Thank you very, very much. Go ahead, George, play it.
Only 45 minutes from Broadway. Think of the changes it brings. For the short time it takes, what a difference it makes in the ways of the people and things. Oh, what a fine bunch of Rubens. Oh, what a Jay atmosphere. They have whiskers like hay, and imagine Broadway only 45 minutes from here. Only 45 minutes from Broadway.
That's good. It's rather different.
You like that, Miss Templeton, do you? Excuse me. That's only a chorus number. He's got one number called Mary that's just perfect for you.
She doesn't sing that.
She is going to sing that. Oh, shut up. When you hear this, it's the best thing he's ever done.
He hands her the music.
Mary, This looks very interesting.
But you wouldn't like that. It's only a so-so number.
Well, if it's as good as 45 minutes from Broadway.
But it isn't, and besides you...
What do you want to do? Spoil everything?
Let her have that.
Well, let her have it. What difference?
You better let her have it. She's going to sing it. But she can't sing it.
She will sing it. Listen, with Abe's money and your brains, we'll be able to come in here with you.
Shh.
She smiles fondly. Behind her, George throws up his hands. at Mary's.
For it is Mary.
George stands outside the apartment with 4 dozen roses and a box of candy. He opens the door a crack and peeks in at Mary, smiling at the piano.
Society will say, Mary, but it was Mary, Mary.
Wincing, George pulls the door shut and reaches for the buzzer.
La, da, da, da.
Come in.
She rushes to the door.
A little early for Christmas, isn't it?
Oh, I was just passing the flowers and they threw in the candy.
George, I'm sure our song will live forever. I've been playing it ever since you left, and the neighbors haven't complained one. What happened with Faye Templeton?
Oh, she's dying to play the part, but I don't know. I haven't made up my mind yet. Ham or bacon?
Bacon?
Good, ham makes me self-conscious.
Do you mean you're hesitating about having Faye Templeton in your show?
Well, you know how those big stars are always so temperamental and hard to get along with. Asking impossible terms and conditions. I'll take my coffee black.
I think you ought to give in to her.
But, darling, no matter what she asks?
No matter what she asks.
Why are you so concerned with Faye Templeton?
Oh, I don't care for Templeton. I'm looking out for you. Think what it means for you to have a star like Templeton in your show.
Always worried about me, aren't you? Ever think about yourself?
Not much lately. Haven't had time. The minute I saw you without your beard, I knew here was a little boy who needed a lot of looking after. So I gave myself the job. There are a lot of singers, you know, but very few really good looker-afters.
Darling, how would you like a lifetime job of looking after? Leading lady, run of the play. Maybe a few heartaches after the curtain goes up, but I can guarantee you some laughs. How does it sound?
I think I might like it, Mr. Cohan. Could I see some of the script?
He kisses her gently on the lips.
Not bad for a first reading.
He lifts her hand to his lips.
Your coffee's boiling over.
Oh, darling, something I forgot to tell you.
Yes, dear?
I gave your song to Faye Templeton tonight. Darling, you hear me? I gave your song to Faye Templeton tonight.
Yes, I know. I knew you did, dear, when you brought the candy and flowers.
His smile sags into a wily glare. The New Amsterdam Theater, Mary opens a program. The title page reads, George M. Cohan's 45 Minutes from Broadway. The curtain opens on a flowery backdrop, and Faye Templeton steps from the wing, holding her gloved hands out at her sides.
My mother's name was Mary. She was so good and true. Because her name was Mary, she calls me Mary too. She wasn't gay or airy, but plain as she could be. I'd hate to meet a Mary who calls herself Mary.
Mary should have sung it.
Oh, that's all right. Faye has the song, and I have the author.
A wedding band gleams on her finger.
And there is something there that sounds so swell. It's a grand old name.
Now, 4 ladies with parasols.
Only 45 minutes. Think of the changes it brings. For the short time it takes, what a difference it makes.
in the ways of the people and things. Oh, what a fine bunch of Rubens. Oh, what a jay atmosphere. They have whiskers like hay, and imagine Broadway only 45 minutes from here.
The set becomes the New Rochelle train station. Eight men in identical suits tip their boaters as Faye steps from the waiting room carrying a suitcase. Wearing a broad-brimmed hat with a giant plume, she smiles broadly at the gentleman.
It's awfully nice of all you boys to see me to the train.
So long, Mary.
I didn't think you'd care if you should ne'er see me again.
You're wrong, Mary.
This reminds me of my family. On the day I left Connecticut to the depot, then they came with me. I seem to hear them say, so long, Mary.
Mary, we will miss you so.
Fall out of her suitcase. One gent holds up her knickers.
Oh! Oh!
How we hate to see you go.
They pass her clothes along in a line, a dainty shoe, a hat, then bloomers and a garter belt. Away with Faye waving from the back. Daytime outside a theater. A man holds a cigar.
Look at this guy, Cohan. He's got him lined up at the box office. I've never seen the guy. Got his name all over the place. Look at that. Cohan and Harris present George Washington Jr., starring the author and composer, George M. Cohan. I wonder what the M is for. Oh, modesty.
Hello, Mr. Foy.
How are you?
Sure enjoyed your show last night.
Thank you.
You always appear in the kind of stuff I like.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very nice of you. George M. Cohan and his royal family. Books and lyrics, music, and directed by George M. Cohan.
Printed by Sam Davinsky. That must be Cohan's alias.
George appears.
He takes care of himself in billing as George M. Cohan.
You don't have to memorize that one, kid. There's plenty more all over town.
I'd like to forget it. Say, listen, Cole, are you connected with this turkey?
What makes you think it's a turkey? I hear it's pretty good.
It's a malicious rumor to gyp the public. Who is this guy, Cohan? Where is he from? What is he, an upstart?
Oh, he's been through the mill, played everything, small time and big time, vaudeville, rep shows, even followed dog acts.
What's it look like an encore? Say, is he as good as Foy?
Who?
Foy. Eddie Foy. Oh, pardon me.
Pardon me, I didn't quite catch the name. Would you mind spraying it again?
Eddie Foy. The star that's got the big show down the street with a chorus of 70.
Why, I thought they looked a little younger than that. I hear now that Cohan's in town. Foy's going to retire.
Foy won't retire till he's 90.
Is it going to take him that long to discover he has no talent? Why, they tell me when he tries to sing, the orchestra puts up umbrellas.
Tries to sing? Why, he's a genius. He keeps his audience glued to the seat.
That's one way of keeping him in the theater. Cohan does it with talent. Look, produces his own plays, writes his own books, lyrics, and music, plays the leads, and is a great dancer.
He dances, eh? When does he get time to practice?
When you write your own plays, you don't have to practice. Cohan's done all right. He's given the world Yankee Doodle Dandy. What's Foy done for his country?
He gave him 7 kids.
Does he dance?
One of the best.
When does he get time to practice?
Say, listen, young fella. My name's Eddie Foy.
I know it. I'm George M. Cohan.
Oh, so you're Cohan. Well, if I said anything accidental to make you mad, I want you to know I'm darn glad I did.
I don't blame you. I'd feel the same way if I were up against Cohan. What do you like to drink?
Oh, Moxie.
I can supply it. The attraction inside is a whole lot bigger than I am. Come and see it when your show closes.
The poster reads, George Washington Jr., starring the author and composer George M. Cohan. Now latecomers find their seats in a full theater. The curtain rises on rows of Union soldiers saluting an American flag. Beside the flagpole, a spotlight shines on George, also wearing a Union uniform. A brass band stands in formation behind him. Turning sharply on his heel, he salutes the drum major.
There's a feeling comes a-stealing, and it sets my brain a-reeling when I listen to the music of a military band. Every tune like Yankee Doodle simply sets me off my noodle. It's that patriotic something that no one can understand.
Way down south in the land of God.
Melody untiring. It's so inspiring.
We're wrong, we're going to do believe.
And that's going some for the Yankees by gum. Red, white, and blue, I am for you.
Boy Scouts
honest,
march up behind him.
You're a grand old flag. You're a grand old flag. You're a high-flying flag. And forever in peace may you wave. You're the emblem of the land I love. The home of the free and the brave. Every heart beats true under red, white, and blue, where there's never a ghost or brag. But should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on that grand old flag. We took the red from the flame of dawn, the dawn of a new nation. And the white was the white of the snow at Valley Forge. The blue was the blue of the free, open sky. And the stars were the 13 sisters by the sea who built their home and called it liberty.
To symbolize the spirit.
Right.
The spirit of freedom.
Right again.
Now, revolutionary soldiers carry a 13-starred flag.
You're a grand old flag, you're a grand old flag.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. His truth goes marching on.
Slaves surround a statue of Lincoln.
And that government of the people, by the people, for the people shall not perish from the earth.
Now Teddy Roosevelt marches with his Rough Riders. Now, people of all professions march forward.
We're one for all and all for one, behind the man, behind the gun. And now that we're in it, we're going to win it. We can't lose a minute, there's work to be done. We're with them, we're with them. United we stand in peace and war. We're with them, we're with them. We'll fight as we did before. For my country is a safe and a
Now George stands in front of the closed curtain. Mary and Josie join him on stage in drum major rec costumes with tall white hats. They march to center stage and begin to tap as the curtain parts behind them, revealing a marching band. In the first row, majorettes wearing glittery boots hold large flags. George's mother and father stride on stage hand in hand, dressed as Uncle Sam and Lady Liberty.
Red, white, and blue, planet there.
audience leaps to its feet. Now, at a billboard for the show, two workers paste a banner reading, "This Week," across the sign. Train tracks fade into the marquee of the Illinois Theater. Now, on a train, the cast rehearses a new show from their seats.
Come along with me away.
Now fans surround the stage door.
May I have your autograph, Mr. Cohan?
To what do you attribute your continued success, Mr. Cohan?
Oh, I'm an ordinary guy who knows what ordinary guys like to see.
A banner reads, "Happy New Year, 1912. In a restaurant, George and Mary sit at a table by a window.
Front row center, the greatest show on earth, the people.
To the people, God bless them.
They toast the window. Outside, a tipsy man clutches the air, trying to take George's glass. On a farm.
Oh, it's such fun, Mother. Having cows and chickens. And everything's running so smoothly.
Well, it's always been a dream of ours, Mary. We kept hoping for 20 years that it might come true someday.
Imagine knowing how to feed chickens, or how much to feed them. And you're a farmer only 3 weeks.
Well, Jerry and I have seen a lot of chickens from train windows, and we always wanted to raise some of our own. You know, watch them hatch and feed them and eat them. If we only could. They're so pretty.
Josie collects kindling as George splits it.
Georgie?
Yeah?
What'd you get Dad for his birthday?
Oh, nothing much. Just a smoking jacket.
Is it bright? Lots of color? I mean, we like it?
Well, it's silk and very red and very yellow.
That'll do it. Look what I got him, Georgie.
A pocket watch.
Well, now, there's a present. That must have set you back a few.
I thought Dad needed a new watch. His old one's so loud you can hear it right through his coat.
She rewraps it, then eyes her brother.
My future husband helped me pick it out.
George turns, narrowing his eyes at her.
Your future what?
Husband. We're getting married as soon as Fred's road tour is over.
He tosses the plank of wood back in the pile, then drives the axe into the snow. Grinning, he stands in front of Josie and looks her over. With his hands on her shoulders, he sits her down, then cups her cheek in his palm.
Well, little Georgie's going to get married, huh? Oh, it doesn't seem that long ago. What happens to the four Cohans?
Oh, just a simple case of subtraction. You know, one from four leaves three. Three Cohans.
That's only arithmetic. One Cohan from four Cohans leaves nothing. Mom and Pop know?
Mm-hmm. Mom's been working on the wedding dress for weeks.
Frowning, he paces with his hands in his pockets. Then he turns to Josie, the corner of his mouth turned up in a smile.
What are you thinking about, Georgie?
He scratches the back of his head, then points at her.
I'm going to write you the most terrific wedding march ever put on paper. It'll pack the pews.
She hugs him, later in the living room.
Say, Dad, would you tell Josie just because she wants to get married that there's no reason to break up the act? The four Cohans are just as much an institution as marriage is.
Oh, Georgie, no one knows that any better than I do. But we want to settle down and raise a family.
What's the matter? Can't he raise a family and be a stage manager, too?
George.
George, I'm afraid your mother and I are breaking up the act before Josie is.
George gazes at his parents over his punch glass, then stands next to Sam and points.
You hear that, Sam? All three of them walking out on me.
Well, it's been a 40-year run, remember?
I'm giving you our 2 weeks' notice, George.
All we'd like to do now is spend the rest of our days here on this farm.
But you can't do that. You can't put an actor out in the grass. Fresh air kills him.
We've gained nearly 10 pounds apiece.
You can work it off. The show's ready to go into rehearsal.
They're grand parts in it for both of you.
No, George, we've had good times together. And, well, new shows need new faces and new feet to go with you.
From now on, it's just you alone, son.
The lights go out, and a butler wheels in gifts and cake.
What's this?
A surprise, Dad.
Happy birthday.
Get your own birthday.
Here we are.
Make a wish.
Make your wish.
I have. Good one, Dad.
I wish you
He tears paper off a gift. Later, he tries on the smoking jacket.
I think somebody gave me that last year.
Oh, not that one.
Yeah, it looks fine. Had it made up in that old backdrop you like so well. Fireproofed and everything.
Ah, darling, that's a lovely watch.
I'm so glad you like it, Dad.
This is better than being on extra closing.
Yeah, the only trouble is it's 3 minutes fast.
Dad, press the little button on the side and see what happens.
Plays one on one and segues into Dixie.
Here's some more ties that you won't like, Jerry.
I'll have to open up a store, huh?
He reaches in his pocket.
Oh, here's a letter from George.
Well, I don't want you to open that now. That's just between
you haven't
and
written me a letter in 20 years. I'm going to open it now.
I'm going to
read it.
You don't have to read
George,
it now, do you?
George, this is your party. Now you sit down here and let him read his letter.
George casts a sheepish glance at Sam as his dad unfolds the letter.
Dear Dad, this is your 62nd birthday, and God bless you. Maybe I've never told you before, but no son ever had a better dad or one to be prouder of. You and Mother have always given me more love and understanding than I ever deserved. And all the luck I've had is due to the things you two have taught me. Nothing I can do would ever repay the debt. But here's a little present for you and Mother. From this day on, you and I are partners in every theater and theatrical property I possess. Half and equal. The Cohan Theater, the Astor, the Gaiety, and the Grand Opera House in Chicago. And all my plays and songs as long as they, or you and I, live.
Swallowing hard, he takes his pince-nez glasses off his nose.
Well, these are not my reading glasses. Why didn't somebody give me some reading glasses for my birthday? Wish you all my love. Your son and partner, George. Well, George, on behalf of your mother and myself, I... There she goes, stealing the scene again.
Now a carriage pulls up in front of a brightly lit theater.
One success followed another, but there was one challenge I hadn't met. Critics kept saying that musicals and cheap comedies were all I could write. I could wave a flag, they said, nothing else. So I wrote a legitimate drama, very deep and very significant. No music, no gags, no flag waving. I called it Popularity. The title showed how hard I was hoping. I couldn't attend the opening performance because I was appearing down the street in the Yankee Prince.
On a stage, George bows low as the curtain closes.
Open it up. Keep it closed, Pop.
Yes, sir.
Cohan, you're surely not going to your dressing room now. Why, you're good for at least another 5 curtain calls.
That's enough for tonight.
Mr. Cohan, are you sure you're feeling well?
I feel all right. Any news in Popularity?
No, but they should be ringing down just about now.
You think Sam and my family let me know what's happening?
Well, it's a good sign. They probably couldn't tear themselves away.
A valet takes his hat.
What time is it, Eddie?
7:30, sir.
That's about right.
Yes, sir.
I wonder what's keeping them. That's an early show. They ought to be here by now. Maybe something wrong with Mom and Dad.
We've got the reports here from Detroit on the minstrel show.
What'd we lose this week?
Oh, 10,000, more or less.
That's total loss so far?
A few dollars under 200,000.
That include the cost of the red ink? Popularity better be a hit. You'll have to do something on that, too. Eddie, call Wallach and find out what's keeping them, will you?
Yes.
What did the Detroit papers have to say about the minstrel show?
Here they are. Rave notices again.
Rave notices. That's bad. The better notices you get on minstrel shows these days, the more it costs you.
All except the last act. Allison suggests a new finish.
See, a new finish. How about Saturday night?
Close it.
Close it.
Saturday night.
Give the company 2 weeks' salary.
All right.
George's parents and Mary come in with Sam.
Hello, Dad. Mom. Hey, darling. Well, Dad is worried about you. Wonder what happened to you. Sit down, sweet. Sit right there. Here's it.
That theater's awfully cold, George. Better have some more heat put in there.
Take care of that right away.
Remember that skating act that opened the show in Camden? They were there, sitting right beside us. I wonder where they got the money.
You mean Finnegan, Feeney, and Riley?
Yeah.
I remember them well. Well, come on, tell me. How'd it go?
Well, the audience loved it, every minute of it.
The sets were beautiful, George.
George reads their faces one at a time.
Why so quiet, Sam?
The toughest house I've ever seen. The critics walked out at the end of the second act.
He glances at Mary. She bows her head.
Come on, Dad. Come on. Let's have it.
Well, there's no use beating around the bush. Pretty bad, George.
Could have been a lot better.
All right. You
write a bad play. The only thing to do is forget about it. Everybody's entitled to one failure. Come on, let's go over to Delmonico's, have the party, just as though the show was a hit.
Yes. No, I'll tell you what you do. You take the girls on over there, and I'll see you in about a half hour. I've got some things I want to talk over with Sam.
Slapping George on the shoulder, Jerry accompanies Nellie and Mary from the dressing room. Later, on the sidewalk with Sam.
Those critics have been after my blood for years. They'll gang up on me and do a good job of it. But I'll beat them to it. I'll take an ad in every paper right alongside of their reviews, telling the public we got the greatest show in town, an unqualified hit, sold out for 10 weeks in advance, will run a year. It'll be my word against theirs, and the public will believe me.
Oh, listen, Georgie, you can't do that.
Why not?
You've got too big a reputation. Listen, you can't disappoint the public. They'll never forgive you. They'll never trust you again. We stuck our necks out. We got clipped. Georgie.
He strides into a cable office.
Listen, George, you can't do this. You'll always regret it.
Sit down and take this.
We'll be sorry.
To the theater going public.
George.
To the theater going public. I wrote a play called Popularity. Mr. Harris and I produced that play. In the opinion of people we respect, it is a bad play. In this, we heartily concur. It is a very bad play. I do humbly apologize and ask forgiveness for having presented anything of which you couldn't possibly approve. There will be 5 more performances. Please miss them. Signed. Happy?
Smiling, Sam squirts ink it in.
It's a wonderful second act, Griffin. Send copies of this to all the New York papers for the next edition.
X-ray, Lusitania torpedoed by German troops! X-ray!
Sam and George rush out onto the sidewalk. A crowd jostles a newsboy to get copies of the paper. George grabs a copy and he and Sam step aside to read it. Frowns crease their brows.
This is it, George. And we were worried about the success or failure of a show. Now we really got something to worry about.
A man throws another bundle of newspapers onto a stack. In 2-inch-high letters, the headline reads, Sub Sinks Lusitania. Later, a headline reads, War is Declared.
Seems it always happens. Whenever we get too high-hat, too sophisticated for flag-waving, some thug nation decides we're a pushover, all ready to be blackjacked. And it isn't long before we're looking up mighty anxiously to be sure the flag's still waving over us.
At an army recruiting office, George stands in a long line of men filing through the door. Inside, a shirtless man stands on a platform, raising one foot, then the other.
Left foot. Right foot. On your toes.
He strikes a ballet pose.
I used to be a model.
You look awful pretty peeling potatoes.
On your way, wise guy.
Next.
George is next in line at a desk.
Right foot.
All right. Take this paper and report to Sergeant Cooper for your examination. Next. Name, please.
Oh. George M. Cohan. Occupation? Actor, author, composer, and producer. Address? Devonshire Hotel.
How do you know so much about me?
Don't you recognize me, Mr. Cohan? I used to be a clerk at the Friars Club. Age 39.
Doesn't even give me a chance to lie about it.
39? I'm sorry, Mr. Cohan. You're overage. 31's the limit now.
Well, what, 8 or 9 years, more or less? The Germans aren't going to ask me for a birth certificate.
Oh, I know how you feel, Mr. Cohan, but you've got to be young and tough for this army. It's no picnic. All those hardships, the mental strain, the trenches, the fighting, the marching.
And the mamzelles?
I hope.
No, but you'll never be able to stand it.
Hardships and physical strain? Young man, you don't know what you're talking about. This war is a coffee clutch compared to a season with a musical show. I'd like to see any one of these kids do what I do in the course of an evening's performance and be on their feet at the finish. I'll give you a slight idea what I mean.
He waves the men aside and puts on his hat. With 2 bucking kicks, he shoots across the floor. Turning in the air, he lands stiff-legged and flops forward at the waist. Sweeping back, he finishes with 2 spinning leaps.
Well, thank you very much for your entertainment, Mr. Cohan. But I'm afraid we have more need of you here than over there.
Well, that'll make the war last a year longer.
Goodbye, Mr. Cohan.
Thank you, Major.
Thank you.
Goodbye, Mr. Cohan.
All right, thank you.
Outside the army office, a military band wears flat-brimmed campaign hats and wool uniforms. George stops in front of a soldier playing a trumpet. Frowning thoughtfully, he cocks his head to the side. Empty stage in a dark auditorium. George sits at the piano.
Mm-hmm.
George wears his overcoat around his shoulders and his hat tipped back on his head. A single bare light bulb lights the stage. On tour at an army base.
Johnny, get your gun, get your gun, get your gun.
Take it on the run, on the run, on the run. Hear them calling, you and me, every son of liberty.
Hurry right away, no delay, go today.
Make your daddy glad to have had such a lad. Tell your sweetheart not to hide,
to be proud of boys in line.
Over there, send the word, send the word over there.
Pick it up, 40, soldier. Keep singing, Nora. Where are the lights?
Oh, suppose the generator's gone again.
Hit your lights and play them on the stage so we can keep going, will you?
All right.
You do that fine. Thanks.
That's which.
Hey, boys, hit your lights and keep them on the stage until the others come up, will you? That's fine. Thanks very much.
Trucks light the stage.
The Yanks are coming. The Yanks are coming. The drums, drums coming everywhere. So prepare. Say a prayer. Send the word to beware. We'll be over, we're coming over, and we won't come back till it's over over there.
Everybody sing!
Over there, send the word over there. And the Yanks are coming, the Yanks are coming, the drums, drums coming.
Their hats in the air. Now a headline appears over an image of marching troops. Congress calls Over There American Victory Hymn. At a port, a band plays as soldiers board a battleship. More troops board a giant frigate with jagged teeth painted on the prow. Overseas, a soldier sprints across a battlefield, diving into a foxhole. Now a headline reads, Armistice, War Ends.
Won the World War. Manhattan went wild with post-war hysteria. But I spiked my shows with pre-war stuff. The sentiment and humor and older America had aged in the wood.
In a kingdom all our own, with little Cupid on the throne.
A marquee reads, The Royal Vagabond.
On my knee, you'll be as happy as can be. In a love nest, cozy and warm.
Another Cohan show, Mary.
Like a dove nest.
Cohan's Little Nellie Kelly.
And it's all day long they bring flowers all dripping with dew, and they join in the chorus of Nellie Kelly, I love you.
Song and Dance Man.
He is the man who owns Broadway. That's what the daily papers say.
The Merry Malones.
Where could you find another? I'd like to be shown another like Molly Malone.
Billy.
But I love the name Billy. My dad was the same Billy.
Nighttime. In an urban landscape, the marquees of Broadway flash show titles and the name George M. Cohan. Now, above the theater rooftops, the lights of the city spread to the horizon.
Still, it was lonely on the main stem. Mother and Josie were gone. Dad was by himself on the farm and had grown very old. Every night I went to the theater, I expected a phone call. Well, finally it came.
At the farm, George's father lies in bed in his dimly lit room. One doctor stands at the foot of the bed while another leans over him with a stethoscope.
You'd better give him two more cc's.
We might as well try to make him as comfortable as possible.
Yes, Dr. Anderson.
If you have to get back to town, Dr. Llewellyn, I'll be here all night.
It's all right. I'll wait till George M. gets here from the theater. Cigarette, Doctor?
Yes, I will. Thanks.
Remember, I was a kid in medical college in Baltimore when I first saw the four Cohans. They were a great act.
Yes, they were.
They stroll across the sitting room.
I always thought George M.'s sister was the loveliest dancer I'd ever seen.
Can't help thinking a theatrical era is dying in there. Sister and his mother gone, and now the old man. Some ways I think he was the best performer, the lot.
Well, I'd settle for his age. There never was anything dull about his life either. And he's lived to see his son in an American institution.
Yeah.
I'd settle for that, too.
George and Mary rush up the stairs in their evening clothes, followed by Sam.
Hello, Mr. Cohen. How is he? Resting quietly.
I think you'd better go in alone.
George nods to Mary, then goes to the bedside and places a hand on his father's.
We can't do that. Wait till George gets here. Where's George?
Here I am, Dad. Here I am.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad you came. The booking office has been calling up all day, and they want us to play Des Moines last Saturday of the week.
Oh, no, don't worry about that. We're not going to. I've canceled it. We can pick it up on the way back.
How did it go tonight?
Oh, fine.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Well, it's not every kid that gets a chance to play Peck's bad boy.
That's right.
Did you... Are you nervous? Do you remember your lines?
Oh, sure, every one. I can lick any kid in town.
Good. Why don't you upstage your mother? Whale the tarot out of you.
Well, don't worry, Dad. I'll never do that. I'll play the whole show with one foot in the trough.
No. We'll be billed as the four Cohans. You're not going to break up the act.
Don't worry, Dad. They never will. We won't let them. Won't let them.
How many curtain calls you take tonight?
Six. Six curtains.
That's pretty good for a drama.
Yeah.
Make his peace?
Uh-huh. I thank them for us. I said my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. I thank you.
George drops his face onto his father's chest. His father tenderly strokes his hair. Then his brow beaded with sweat, his head turns to the side, and his hand falls limply to the bed. George looks up with tear-filled eyes. He rests his father's stray hand on top of the other on his chest, then stands and kisses him on the forehead. In the sitting room, tears run down Mary's cheeks. Head bowed, George leaves the room and rejoins Mary. They embrace. George presses his face against her shoulder. Now a headline in Variety reads, Cohan and Harris part company. Famous partnership dissolved after 15 years of sensationally successful play producing. In the office, George gazes at a check-sized business card displaying the two men's pictures.
Well?
He tears off his picture and hands it to Sam.
It's a good combination, Sam. Worked well for a long time.
Yeah, now that it's all over, who was the senior partner and who was the junior partner?
I mean, who was Dietz and who was Goff? Well, I'll bet it's the first firm in the history of show business had two senior partners. Well, you know how I feel, don't you, Sam?
Sure, I understand.
You know, when Dad died, with him went the last link with the four Coheds. All the backslapping and the applause, well, became unimportant. No more fun in it. Didn't mean anything anymore with Dad, Mom, and Josie gone, so... Mary and I going away and enjoy ourselves. Visit all those places we've always wanted to see. There are no theaters. Nobody ever even heard of us.
Well, you'll have to go to Timbuktu.
Got it booked.
George... You've always been the one with the words. I never was much of a hand at saying things. But we've done more than make a lot of money. Lose a little. Sometimes friends drift apart. Let's not let that happen to us.
No matter how legal this illusionist partnership is, Sam,
50% of me will all be right here in this office.
I'll remember that when the rent comes due.
You're going to be more successful than ever. But if ever the rent does come due and you can't meet it, well, you know. And by the same token, if I get stuck in Madagascar, you'll hear from me.
You better get out of here.
George sighs.
That ship will sail without you.
Sam brings George's coat and hat, then slips a small box into George's suit pocket.
Seasick pills. I won't go to the boat with you. You know how red my nose gets.
Reporters stand outside the door.
Hey, what's this? We thought you guys weren't speaking to each other.
Can we have a picture of you and Mr. Harris tearing up your contract?
Well, that's impossible. We never had a written contract.
They shake.
The only contract we've ever had.
Hold that pose, will you? We want to show it to our legal department.
Shoot it, boys.
At a pier, a crowd waves to passengers on an ocean liner.
Life was less full, but it was by no means empty. I still had Mary, a playmate as well as a helpmate. We set out to rubberneck at the world.
Porters wheel a trunk into George and Mary's cabin. In London, they drive around Trafalgar Square.
Nelson Monument. It's a good thing I wasn't born an Englishman. With the history their flag has, I'd have waved myself to death.
Switzerland.
Oh, little, 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 little.
Oh, George, I didn't know you could yodel.
Learned it on the farm. Nothing but hog calling with frost on it.
In Hong Kong, a man pulls George and Mary down the street in a rickshaw.
It takes two men to impersonate a horse on Broadway, and you always have trouble catching the front end.
They gaze at the Statue of Liberty from a ship's deck.
But folks always come back to where their heart is. We came back to the farm. The farm we co-hand had dreamed of when farmers were envying us.
As George lies in a hammock reading Variety, a convertible jalopy carrying two teenaged couples stops at the farm's gate. A boy wearing a hat with a turned-up brim sits at the wheel.
Hey, mister, our radiator needs some H2O. Can we use your well?
Sure, go ahead. Help yourselves.
Come on, Jack. Let's make this hop-up solid.
Okay, Jackson. Come on. Many free jitney.
Radiator busted?
Nah. It's only got high blood pressure.
What are you going to do about tires when those give out?
Oh, it'll run a lot smoother on the rims.
Sticks, nicks, hicks, picks. Greek. I'll bet that's Greek talk.
No, that ain't Greek. That's Swedish or Russian. Sticks, nicks, hicks, picks.
Well, that's show business talk. Here, I'll translate it for you. Sticks, small towns, nicks, refuse. Hicks, rube, picks, pictures. Small towns refuse, rube, pictures. Sticks, nicks, hicks, picks.
Sticks, nicks, hicks, picks.
A stick, a nicks, hicks, a picks. A sticks, a nicks, hicks.
You know, I thought that was new jive talk.
New what talk?
Jive talk.
Oh.
Are you an actor, sir?
Used to be.
What were some of your pictures?
Oh, not in pictures. I was on Broadway in the Legitimate Theater.
Oh. What's your name, sir?
Cohan.
Cohen?
Cohan. George M. Cohan.
I guess you must have been before our time.
Yes, guess I was.
Well, were you ever in some big shows?
A few.
Like what?
Oh, Little Nellie Kelly, Tavern, Our Wilderness. Raising a vacuum bottle. Well, I guess your parents must have seen me, fathers and mothers.
Maybe they have. I never heard them talk about it.
Have you ever a song called, Give My Regards to Broadway?
No, sir. Who sang it?
Who sang it?
Oh, was it a theme song or something?
Was that a follow-up to Beat Me Daddy Into a Bar?
Yes, or Jeepers Creepers.
Jeepers Creepers, where'd you get those peepers? Jeepers Creepers, where'd you get those eyes?
Come on, kids, time's a-wasting.
Well, we got a scram now.
Swing session.
Thank you very much, Mr. What was your name again,
Cohan,
sir?
Cohan, George Cohan.
Goodbye, Georgie. You're cute.
George's smile disappears as she scampers to the car and piles in with the others. As they drive away, the girls wave.
Bye!
Throwing down his newspaper, he falls off the hammock. Later, in his tuxedo, he strolls with Mary into the living room.
I'm not angry, but it is very discouraging. Kid asked me my name, and I said Cohan. He asked me again, and I said Cohan. Never even heard of me. 16 years old, I bet you can't read.
You've been away from the theater for years, George, years. 9 or 10 generations have grown up since then. Naturally, they don't remember you. Oh, he's got that good a memory.
Why not? Many generations remembered my father and mother in Vaudeville.
Well, that's because they were real troopers. They stayed with it. Your father could do a good buck and wing when he was 60 years old.
What makes you think I can't?
I'd hate to see you try it. Your father never sat around an orchard listening to his arteries hardening.
Nothing matter with my arteries.
No, not right now, because those kids got you all worked up.
You're picking on me for a reason, Mary. You're trying to get a rise out of me. Come on, let's have it. What is it?
All right, here it is. I got a long-distance call from Sam Harris this afternoon.
What about?
He's producing a new show by Kaufman and Hart.
They're good writers. Nothing I can do to improve their stuff.
Sam thinks you could, if you played the lead.
Play the lead? Now, what is the matter with that man? Hasn't he got any sense at all? What's he trying to do, spoil our fun?
But are you having fun, George? When we were in Europe, you haunted every theater, not knowing a word that was said on the stage. Going back, congratulating the actors, they didn't even know what you were talking about. Just to smell that grease paint again.
You sound as though you think I'm stage struck. The only reason I ever go near a theater is to get out of the night air. Fun, I'm having a wonderful time. Have nothing to do with Broadway.
Sam says it's a great part. No other actor in the world, but you could do it.
That's just the one with that Harris Kahn. He needs me about as much as he needs a hole in the head.
He really does need you, George. He's in trouble. If positions were reversed, he'd help you out. You know he would. Besides, he never said so, but Sam's broke.
Can you think of any more reasons?
Yes, I want you to.
Well, that's settled. I've never refused you anything, have I? We do it. Come on, let's get packing.
We're all packed. We're all packed, dear. Now you can start getting mad all over again. Because I told Sam I'd talk you into it.
Smiling, he wrinkles up his nose.
What are you laughing about?
Just full of news, aren't you? Telling me all kinds of things, huh? Well, I want you to know I knew it all the time. I was listening in on the phone downstairs while you were talking to Sam.
Why, you devil! You knew it all the time.
And what's more, I phoned Sam right back and told him I'd play it.
He backs toward the wall. He bumps his head. Mary kisses him sweetly. Now a bright sign reads, Sam Harris presents George M. Coan in his triumphal return to the stage in I'd Rather Be Right. On stage, George descends a stairway dressed in a top hat and tails. Reporters and government officials fill the stage.
It's really a wonderful job. For fellows like George, Abe, and me too, it's great to shake hands with a mob and to hold every kid on your knee too. Every word that I speak goes into headlines. When I speak, all the papers hold their deadlines. But I've found a way of dropping a hint or a glint of the truth that the boys cannot print. For instance.
He leans on his cane and peers through his pince-nez glasses.
When I was courting Eleanor, I told her Uncle Teddy I wouldn't run for president unless the job was steady. Don't print it. Strictly off the record. We entertained the royalty, but we were never flustered. We gave them Yankee hot dogs with Coleman's English mustard. Don't print it. Strictly off the record. It's pleasant at the White House, but I'll tell you how I feel. The food is simply terrible, just sauerkraut and veal. If Mrs. R would stay at home, I'd get a decent meal. But that's off the record.
Flipping his cane up onto his shoulder, George bends forward and prances in front of the officials seated at a long-skirted table. At the end of the table, he kicks his foot up, turns, then kicks spryly again. At center stage, he does a jig, kicking one foot, then crossing the other. His feet tap swiftly. The old men at the table bob their heads and smile. Tapping, George spins back across the front of the stage, then leaning forward, prances into the wing. He returns with reporters gathered around him.
I go up to Hyde Park. It's not for just the ride there. It's not that I like Hyde Park, but I love to park in Hyde there. Don't print it. It's strictly off the record. I sit up in my study writing gags for Mr. Ickes and insults for the gentleman who'd love to slip him Ickes. Don't print that. Off the record.
He leaps up onto the table and bucks sideways down the length of it. Jumping to the floor, he kicks both legs in the air and clicks his heels. He swaggers off stage, then returns, nodding to the officials.
I scrapped the Prohibition Act when we required a bracer and finished up the Boulder Dam to give the boys a chaser. Don't print it. It's strictly off the record. And for my friends in Washington who complain about the taxes, who cares as long as we can knock the axe out of the axes? Don't print it. It's strictly off the record. I can't forget how Lafayette helped give us our first chance to win our fight for liberty. And now they've taken France. We'll take it back from Hitler and put ants in his Japans. And that's for the record.
The delighted officials applaud. In the audience, tuxedoed men start a standing ovation as George pulls the curtain across the stage himself. Behind the curtain, he shakes the hands of cast members.
Good work, kids. I'll see you at 11 in the morning.
Now in the Oval Office.
And then came your wire, and I was really worried. But here I am going on like Tennyson's book, giving you the story of my life. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. You should have stopped me.
Why, I wanted to hear the story of your life. It has a direct bearing on my sending for you. Do you know what this is?
He hands George a velvet box.
Congressional Medal of Honor.
Let's see what the inscription says. To George M. Cohan, for his contribution to the American spirit. Over there, and grand old flag. Presented by Act of Congress. I congratulate you, Mr. Cohan. I understand you're the first person of your profession to receive this honor. You should be very proud.
Oh, I am proud. In fact, I'm flabbergasted. First time in my life, I'm speechless. Sure there isn't some mistake?
Quite sure.
But this medal is for people who've given their lives to their country or done something big. I'm just a song and dance man. Everybody knows that.
A man may give his life to his country in many different ways, Mr. Cohan. And quite often, he isn't the best judge of how much he has given. Your songs were a symbol of the American spirit. Over there was just as powerful a weapon as any cannon, as any battleship we had in the First World War. Today, we're all soldiers. We're all on the front. We need more songs to express America. I know you and your comrades will give them to us.
Mr. President, I've just begun earning this medal. It's quite a thing.
Well, it's the best material we could find, what with priorities and all.
Goodbye, sir.
The shake.
And I want you to know that I'm not the only one that's grateful. My mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I assure you, I thank you. And I wouldn't worry about this country if I were you. We've got this thing licked. Where else in the world today could a plain guy like me come in and talk things over with the head man?
Well, that's about as good a definition of America as any I've ever heard. Goodbye, Mr. Cohan, and good luck.
Goodbye, sir, and good luck to you.
As George walks away from the president, the door to the Oval Office opens, casting a shaft of light across the room. In the hallway, he slips the medal into the pocket of his double-breasted suit. An oil painting of Washington hangs at the top of the stairs. George studies it, then descends with light, bouncing steps. Halfway down the stairs, he starts to tap, swinging out his feet with every step. In the foyer, two butlers stare at the white-haired George. Then one helps him don his coat, while the other hands him his hat and cane. Outside, troops parade past the White House gate. Soldiers wear combat uniforms and metal helmets, and each marches with a gun on his shoulder. Older men line the street, some leaving the sidewalk to walk in the parade. With a wistful gaze, George smiles, then joins the crowd. George smiles faintly to himself. An older gentleman stares at him. Swinging his cane onto his shoulder, George joins the parade. The soldier casts a sidelong glance at him.
What's the matter, old-timer? Don't you remember this song?
Seems to me I do.
Well, I don't hear anything.
Marching on, George sings boldly. Word words appear, The End, a Warner Brothers first national picture. The players, James Cagney as George M. Cohan, Joan Leslie as Mary, Walter Houston as Jerry Cohan, Richard Worf as Sam Harris, Irene Manning as Faye Templeton, George Tobias as Dietz, Rosemary DeCamp as Nellie Cohan, Gene Cagney as Josie Cohan, Francis Langford as the singer, George Barbier as Erlanger, S.C. Sakal as Schwab, Eddie Foy Jr. as Eddie Foy, and Captain Jack Young as the president.